Thank you, Lauren. Appreciate the guided meditation. And welcome, everybody. Good to see you all. And as I mentioned in the introduction, that last month we discussed the Four Noble Truths. I think Steve and Lyndall were doing that in Buddhist Essentials class. And the Four Noble Truths being the truth of dukkha, the cause of dukkha and the end of dukkha. Today, Laura and I will be talking about the Eightfold Path, the fourth of the Four Noble Truths. And this is the path that leads to awakening and the end of suffering. The Eightfold Path is divided into three different groups. Panya, which is the Pali term, Panya, meaning wisdom. Sila, meaning ethical behavior. And Samadhi, concentration and mindfulness. And like three legs of a stool, these three aspects of the path are mutually supportive of each other. And I'll start giving an overview of the Eightfold Path and then go into some more depth on the wisdom or the panya component in particular. And then afterwards, Lauren will discuss the other two aspects of the Eightfold Path, ethical behavior and the concentration components. So, you know, we all try to make some sort of sense of our lives. We're all on our own path. And so we ask one way or another, how do I navigate life? How do I provide food, shelter, clothing? How can I be happy? What's important? What's a well-lived life? Or maybe, where am I going? And how do I get there from here? So it's important to reflect on some of these questions. Or as Yogi Berra would say, if you don't know where you're going, you'll end up someplace else. So we come up with a strategy, reflect, and come up with a strategy. And a typical strategy is to seek out the pleasant things in life, the pleasant bits, and get rid of or avoid or deny or push away and navigate around all the unpleasant things that arise. However, you know, like dealing with ever-changing weather, this doesn't work very well. We can't rely on comfort and pleasure as a lasting means of happiness and satisfaction in life. Things don't last. Things fall apart, and life is full of a lot of unexpected surprises. Which brings us to Buddhist offering of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. Like us, Buddha was on his own journey 2,600 years ago. The Eightfold Path described by the Buddha is the result of his own exploration. So let's look at the path that the Buddha took. Prince Siddhartha, as he was known back then, started out living in a very comfortable life in a palace. His family was royalty in the northern area of what's India, around Nepal. Steve and Lauren talked about this during the first Buddhist Essentials class a couple of months ago. So in spite of the comfort he had at his palace, this didn't bring him lasting contentment. So he ventured out from the palace, where he saw sickness, aging, death, you know, the things that happen in life. He also saw a traveling sadhu, a holy man. And seeing all this, he was inspired to pursue a spiritual life of an ascetic, in which he denied his own bodily pleasure and comfort in hopes that it would lead to a spiritual awakening and lasting contentment. That didn't work either. It was a dead end. So he then proceeded to follow a middle path between the extreme of indulgence on the one hand of the material world and asceticism, which saw the body and material world as obstacles to spiritual awakening. And from this path, he ultimately emerged with clarity and a view of the nature of things as they are. And he summarized this in the Four Noble Truths and the three characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, which means impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self. Characteristics of the way life is. On this basis, he taught suffering and the end of suffering. And taught it not as a belief system, but rather he invited us to consider his teachings and to see for ourselves. Ehi Passico, that's said in Pali. So, the fourth noble truth of the Eightfold Path. As I said at the start, the Eightfold Path is divided into three groups. Panya, the wisdom, Sila, ethical behavior, and Samadhi, concentration, mindfulness. And like three legs of a stool, these three aspects of the path are mutually related and supportive of one another. The first leg, wisdom, panya, this is seeing clearly, understanding the way things are, understanding the Four Noble Truths, acknowledging the reality of there being suffering in the world comes with the territory, comes in the form of birth, aging, death, loss. And seeing, this fourth noble truth is seeing how suffering is caused by trying to cling to conditions that are impermanent, inherently unreliable, including the sense of this permanent independent self. The wisdom leg also includes having intentions that are aligned with this understanding. The second leg, ethical behavior, or sila, morality, virtue. This offers a sense of respect for others in regard to what we say and do. It's aligned with and informed by the wisdom leg, wise view and wise intention. And in terms of this path, it's the moral compass. It makes non-abuse a way of life. It creates an atmosphere where others don't have to fear us and we have no regrets. It's characterized by warm-heartedness, caring about our actions and how they affect ourselves and others, and operates from a perspective of kindness, generosity, and respect. Then the third leg of the stool, the fourth noble truth, concentration, samadhi. This is about paying attention, the mindfulness part of the Eightfold Path. It's like the GPS or navigation system. It recognizes where we are, where we're going, whether we're on track or not. Ask, where am I? How am I? It asks, what's the appropriate response to current circumstances? So this third leg is about being awake, noticing, reflecting, seeing for ourselves, discerning, putting effort in being aware and mindful of our intentions and actions, rather than just reacting from past conditionings. So the three legs of the stool are developed together. They're almost like woven together. They're complementary, mutually supportive. The wisdom frames the view, sets the intention. Ethical behavior, speech, and actions align with those intentions, while a steady mindfulness keeps us conscious and aware and on the path. And Lauren will get into this more in her talk. First, I'm going to consider wisdom more closely, and then Lauren will discuss the sila and samadhi. The two wisdom factors of the Eightfold Path are right view and right intention, or often called wise view and wise intention. The question always comes up, well, what is this right? What is this wise? Well, it's like knowing which way to go. If I'm going to be going on a hike, which I like doing, going a hike in the mountains, I'm going to have a map. I'm going to have an idea where I'm going. If I'm going out Lake Serene, for example, up in the Cascades, the right way to go is on this particular path. So by right and wise, it's what gets you to where you want to go. So it's not a belief, but it allows you to proceed on your path to where you want to go. While all eight elements of the this Eightfold Path work together and are interrelated, wise view sets the cornerstone of our practice. Sets our cornerstone. Wise view includes the understanding of the cause of dukkha and the end of dukkha, as described in the Four Noble Truths. It includes the understanding of anicca and anatta, impermanence, not self. And these we're going to actually get into in the next month as we talk about the three characteristics. So we'll get into that more. Wise view also includes an understanding of dependent origination, causes and conditions, and that is how conditioned things come into being and pass away. And I won't delve into that too much right now. I'll just mention it. The wisdom leg of this three-legged stool is the foundation of the practice. It includes a beginning point, a view of where we're going, and an intention to travel that path. View is important. It's very important. It's critical. How we view things determines how we operate in the world. You know, a materialistic zero-sum game, me versus you, as a view. Or we can have a view of we're all in this together, sharing and caring. Or our view could be unclear, confused, and unsure. And maybe we've experienced every one of those at one time or another. Everything flows from our view. Some views lead to happiness, others not so much. Our perceptions are derived from our view. If our view is distorted or unwise, so will our actions and mindfulness be distorted and unwise. If our view is self-centered, self-oriented, we'll make assumptions about that. Vince Lombardi's view was winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. He was a football coach of the Green Bay Packers, for those who might know or not. So you can imagine winning is everything. Imagine how that affects the speech, actions, how he related to people, and the changing conditions around him. I hesitate to bring up this next one, but I will. Consider the view of Vladimir Putin. I don't have to get political here, but as someone with a view about life, I would guess he believes that happiness is achieved through the accumulation of power, control, wealth, fame. He sees winners and losers. He wants to be a winner. Speech and actions are going to be used to support that view. People will be seen as a resource for or an obstacle to achieving personal happiness. Any mindfulness or reflection will be used to consider, am I winning or losing? And how can I beat the other guy? And of course, there are plenty of examples of this view these days, including plenty closer to home. On the other hand, I like to consider what Carl Sagan says. Carl Sagan was astrophysicist, and you may have known him from his show on TV as well as the work he's done in space travel. And he was working on the Voyager 1 and 2 exploration of the outer planets of the solar system back in the late 90s. And these planets were looking at Jupiter and Saturn and went past Neptune and Uranus, and taking unbelievable pictures on the way. And before these probes left the solar system, Carl Sagan asked them to turn the cameras back to the Earth and take a picture. And this picture was amazing. It was a field of stars, millions, I don't know how many, thousands, many dots of light. And in amongst those dots of light was a tiny blue ball. And Carl Sagan talked about this. Pale blue dot, that's all this was, pale blue dot. He said, look at that dot. That's here, that's home, that's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being, whoever was, lived out their lives. Every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor, and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. Our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than that distant image of a tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known. I find this very compatible with the Buddhist view of Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. So, with wise view as a cornerstone, wise intention naturally follows. That's the other aspect of the first part of this first leg of the stool. Wise intention can be summarized quite simply. It's living a life for my welfare, the welfare of others, and leading to peace. Now, this is a high-level intention. It frames everything. If we're clear about our intentions, decision-making is easy. Everything flows from this top-level intention. It might be challenging at times in ethical dilemmas, and a path we take might not be easy. In fact, it might be very hard, but it's always clear which direction to go. If we're clear about our intention, it's clear. Not necessarily easy. If I go to the hike, I like going to Lake Serene up in the Cascades. I want to take the path that gets me there. And as I go off the trail, I say, okay, here goes the path. It's a difficult one. Well, there's another path. It's an easy one. I don't choose the easy one. I choose the one that gets me to Lake Serene, even if it's the difficult one. So you take the path of where you want to go. Wise view and intention have an interest in wanting to end suffering for ourselves and others. Their caring sense of connectedness, intention about what we say and do, an intention about what we inclined our minds and hearts towards. Imagine how a view and intention like this would work for a politician as they shape public policy. Their intention is for my welfare, welfare of others. How would it affect a parent? How would it guide a parent in raising a child? or us in relationship to our friends, family, and community. Buddha's teaching of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path is a pragmatic practice. And it has certainly been really helpful in my life. I feel it's the most important thing I've ever learned. And over the years, it's resulted in a lot less suffering for me, and distress in my life, in my relationships. There's been more ease, less worry, more contentment. I feel this path has allowed me to be more accepting of the gains and losses, the comings and goings in life, more accepting of the differences that we have amongst ourselves. And I think its message of connection and caring could serve us well in response to social issues of today as well. The political divisiveness that's led by, for my welfare, welfare of others, leading to peace. Racial and economic inequities and injustice. What leads to peace? And how we work together in response to climate change and caring for nature. The pale blue dot. Together. I think this is good stuff. These are great teachings. I'm glad the Buddha decided to share it with us. And I hope you all found some value in it as well. Thank you.